You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Dr. Lara Greaves. Kia ora, Lara. How are you this morning?
Morning. Same old, same old. How are you?
Good. It's nice to chat with you. It's been a busy old time. Let's talk about water first. We've heard the government's reforms of what was three waters, now is looking more like 10 waters, but that's not the official name. What's your takeaway from what we've seen from Kieran McEnulty and the Prime Minister on this one?
Ah, well, it's like, where do we start? Where in the order of all the things do we start? So the initial free waters policy, the idea was of this economies of scale type idea. So the more that councils, especially councils with small ratepayer bases, could get together and unite on things, the costs would come down. You know, it's just like some ratepayer bases are 12,000 residents. Some are more like a million. You know, that whole idea that they would get together and it would be cheaper. And it was one of the things that a lot of commentators, pretty much everyone pointed to, that Labor didn't really control the narrative around that and didn't control what is a cost of living type idea. Mm. And with Chris Hipkins taking over as Prime Minister, there's been this clear shift in talking about free waters as a cost-saving mechanism, as one of those bread and butter policies. And part of that was getting Kieran McEnulty to lead that as a relatively new minister. By all accounts, he's doing a really solid job. But that, I have to say, I was incredibly impressed by various interviews by him that really articulating the cost savings. And then, of course, the big issue and the thing that people seem to know about, even if they don't know about water policy, is the co-governance, which has been, watered down in this version.
Right. Well, in what ways has it been watered down? I think we still were struggling to get our head around what it actually was as a narrative when we were talking about three waters collectively. But what has it turned into in this new iteration?
Yes, so collectively, looking across all of New Zealand, there's a clear knowledge gap around the treaty that the New Zealand history curriculum and other initiatives really seek to fill over time, and we can really see this. And the rhetoric around co-governance and just like the abuse the Ngāi Mahuta had to face and just really a lot of misinformation about it and what co-governance is and what constitutes what. And I think it's a real lesson for politics now, politicians, that where there's a knowledge vacuum, it will be filled by disinformation, misinformation. That's just the reality of politics now with the internet. And so the original model was that governing these entities, there would be sort of 50-50 representation of Māori appointed by Mana Whenua, that is like hapu and iwi type organisations. Now what we've got is a case where these 10 entities, so it's gone from the 4 entities to the 10 entities, these 10 entities, Mana Whenua will sit on a panel that appoints the board. So they will have equal representation on a panel. So I think Moko Te Pāmia, the Far North Mayor, was like, he was calling it like sitting on a committee for appointment or something like that,
right. Not
co-governance.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a really interesting one. Kieran McEnulty, as you mentioned, has been quite eloquent in talking about this as an issue, particularly when it comes to Māori having, you know, designated water rights under what is essentially our founding document. We have, you know, complicated idea of a founding document or documents in Aotearoa, but in Te Tiriti, there's a lot of very clear outlining of that, and also in the law, we've seen a lot of previous examples of that. How do you think we're going to see this government, if they are able to enact this plan, walk the walk of the sort of talk we've seen Kieran McEnulty maybe put out there a bit more?
Yeah, and he's actually been really good at countering those discussions around, is this democracy, what is democracy? Especially Jack Kane was kind of going after him on those points. So it was a kind of good debate and a good discussion and a good thing to articulate. And he was, as you said, really good at drawing on, like, the actual words of the treaty and past tribunal cases and things along those lines. So there was a clear articulation, and sometimes I think it is actually really good for non-Māori, for Pākehā, to front these things, because when Māori are fronting them to that middle New Zealand, to someone who might be a little bit more on the Most are signed. But they might look at a Māori front end going, well, that person's doing a power grab. Mm. And so that is actually, like, from a pragmatic perspective, and I hate to say this, is sometimes it's good to have non-Māori to have Pākehā fronting these things. And what it will look like going forward is it will look like Chris Hipkins and Kieran McNulty fronting Free Waters. We're talking about Free Waters. So two Pākehā men. It just, I don't know, there's something about two Pākehā men fronting a policy that has some Māori representation in it that I think might help to take the heat out of it.
Mm. Well, let's talk a bit more about Te Tiriti. The National Party's had a bit of a week of it. Their treaty spokesperson, Joseph Mooney, has made some comments that are pretty inaccurate around Te Tiriti. Can you explain what has happened for people who maybe have missed this?
Yes, so basically, one of those things, and we're seeing this with the National candidate, Stephen Jack, at the moment as well, where social media use is getting politicians into trouble. So Joseph Mooney tweeted a reply to someone on the wording of Te Tiriti, talking about how Article 2 was referring to Tino Ranga Te Tatanga. In the Te Reo Māori, the original version was referring to Tino Ranga Te Tatanga for, like, all New Zealanders, and he was reading that interpretation as, like, meaning everyone here right now, we all have Tino Ranga Te Tatanga. So that was, like, an interpretation that a lot of us, all of the, like, legal academics who I respect a lot, like Carwin Jones, have been like, no, that's not a thing. Sorry, not a thing. No, I've never heard that interpretation of paternity before. And we've had a similar thing with Brooke Van Velden kind of changing some of the words. So we're seeing this really interesting contestation of the original wording of paternity, which, I mean, they're engaging with it, I guess, politicians on the right. They're acknowledging it exists and it's a basis for rights, but, yeah, there's a bit of murkiness going on there.
Is it a red herring as well? I mean, they're engaging with it perhaps, but they're perhaps engaging in bad faith. Would that be a fair thing to say?
Yeah, probably. But, again, it goes back to that vacuum of the information that a lot of New Zealanders don't understand it. They've seen Te Tiriti as this Māori thing sitting over there that they don't need to learn about and understand. And so that is where you get these one-liners, these headliners, starting to fill that gap in their knowledge or that space in their knowledge. And I think we have to be really careful about that and really careful about that in our own whānau. I've got Pākehā whānau, Māori whānau, who, you know, like it's like talking to them about it and correcting that in a nice, caring way that doesn't make us sound pretentious is probably like going to be something we're going to do in these next few years.
One thing I just want to get your thoughts on before we let you go, Lyra, is we are, you know, heading into an election year and we're already starting to see quite a polarised discussion online and in the media about various issues that sort of are quite hot button or very, you know, personally felt by people. How do you think we're going to see our politicians, particularly in the major parties, deal with this sort of hangover from COVID, this misinformation vacuum, as you said? What are we seeing and what do you anticipate we might see for the rest of the year?
Well, look, I would say is I think that on the right, Luxon has been very moderate and very measured in his response to a lot of this stuff that's happened already around this potential, this whole idea of culture wars politics, which is just really ideological polarisation on some of the social policy dimensions. We see it especially concentrated around transgender rights. We also see it around Māori rights as well. And Luxon has actually been quite measured. When you've actually seen the words that he's said, he's not necessarily been racking it up as such. And so, like, generally what's happened in a lot of countries is you have, say, like, centre-right or even centre-left, you know, leader who's trying to sort of gain attention and score points in that space. And that's, we don't have that so much in the centre. Where we're likely to see a lot of movement is around people like Winston Peters who need the media to get the oxygen into his party. And that's probably where, and of course, a bit from X, but mainly I think Winston Peters continually trying to stir up different things because that's just what he needs. And that otherwise it's really hard being a party outside of Parliament, and that's what he'll continue to try to do. And, yeah, I don't have a solution for it.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just have to see what happens. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Lyra. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Kia ora, ka kite.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.